ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्ताव भूतले श्रीमते भक्तवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नामने नमस्ते सारस्वतदेव गौरवाणी प्रचारणे निर्विशेष शून्यवाणी पाश्चातदेश तदने श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसुद्धि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 8, verses 26 to 34. Yeah? So I'll just read from 26 onward because there's no purport. The inhabitants of Gandharva Loka and Charana Loka then took the opportunity to play their musical instruments such as conch shells, bugles, and drums. They began dancing and singing along with their wives. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the great sage Angira, and similar directors of universal management showered flowers and chanted mantras indicating the transcendental glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All the demigods, along with the Prajapatis and their descendants, being blessed by Lakshmi's glance upon them, were immediately enriched with good behavior and transcendental qualities. Thus, they were very much satisfied. O King, because of being neglected by the Goddess of Fortune, the demons and Rakshasas were depressed, bewildered, and frustrated, and thus they became shameless. Next appeared Varuni, the lotus-eyed goddess who controls drunkards. With the permission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the demons, headed by Bali Maharaj, took possession of this young girl. O King, thereafter, while the sons of Kasyapa, both demons and demigods, were engaged in churning the ocean of milk, a very wonderful male person appeared. He was strongly built. His arms were long, stout, and strong. His neck, which was marked with three lines, resembled a conch shell. His eyes were reddish, and his complexion was blackish. He was very young. He was garlanded with flowers, and his entire body was fully decorated with various ornaments. He was dressed in yellow garments and wore brightly polished earrings made of pearls. The tips of his hair were anointed with oil, and his chest was very broad. His body had all good features. He was stout and strong like a lion. He was decorated with bangles. In his hand he carried a jug filled to the top with nectar. Okay, so now we're at verse 34. Savai Bhagavata Sakshat Vishnor Amsamsat Sambhava Danvantara Iti Kyata Ayurveda Drig Ijabhak. Yesa, He, Vai, Indeed, Bhagavata, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sakshat, Directly, Vishnu, of Lord Vishnu, Amsa Amsa Sambhava, Incarnation of the plenary portion of a plenary portion, Dhanvantari, and Dhanvantari, Iti, Las, Kataha, celebrated, Ayurveda Drik, fully conversant in medical science, Ijabhag, one of the demigods, eligible to share the benefits of sacrifices. Translation, this person was Dhanvantari, a plenary portion of a plenary portion of Lord Vishnu. He was very conversant with the science of medicine, and as one of the demigods, he was permitted to take a share in sacrifices. Purport, Srila Madhvacharya remarks, Tesham Satyat Chalanartam Harir Dhanvantarir Vibhu Samartapi Asuranam Tu Sahastat Amuchat Sudam. Dhanvantari, who was carrying the jug containing nectar, was a plenary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but though he was very strong, the Asuras were able to take the jug of nectar from his hands. So this whole section is a description of the production of the amrita, or nectar, from churning of the milk ocean. So this is a very elaborate pastime in which the demons and the devatas cooperated to get nectar. And that's a little bit surprising, because why would they cooperate together? And more surprisingly, of course, there was the same father. Kasyapa was the father of the demons and the devas. So at the beginning of creation, we find different entities created by Brahma and his prajapatis and the great sages. And basically, we have two types of, besides the animals and the plants and the birds, etc., and the snakes, we get the production of the devatas, or the good people, and the bad people, the demons, from the very beginning of creation. Why is that? That's because karma is there, and some people, by their karma, end up with demon bodies, some end up with deva bodies. So the Lord has to create these two types of people. So one of the topics of Bhagavatam, there's 10 topics of Bhagavatam, starting with the primary creation, Sarga and Visarga, etc. Then we have the production of the place for the living entities, that is Sthana, geography of the universe. And then we have how the Lord protects the devotees in the material world. And we have another topic called Uti. And this refers to the different tendencies in the universe, which are basically two, the demon and the devotee. And so we see from the very beginning of the day of Brahma, we have two types of living entities, humans entities, that is the devas and the demons, the devotees and the demons. And there's a constant conflict between these two forces in the material world. Those that favor God, those that don't favor God. And we'll see that the cantos from the third canto onward up until the tenth canto is a description of how there's a fight between the demons and the devotees, or the demons and the Supreme Lord. When the devotees are weaker, then the Supreme Lord himself comes. So therefore we get appearance of manvantaras, avatars, and we get the Supreme Lord himself coming as Krishna finally to defeat the demons. So the demons are an intrinsic factor of the material world, which means we can never be completely happy in the material world. So therefore we have descriptions of how you go to Svarga Loka to get your eternal happiness. as Jaimini says. You go to Svargaloka and you live there forever, happily. But then, actually you don't, because even the demons can go up there. So sometimes we see the demons defeat the devatas, like Bali. He kicks the Indra out of heaven. So it's not so secure after all. And the demons can do this. They have power also. So there's a constant fight between the devatas and the demons in this material world. So that's what uti means, one of these topics of the Bhagavatam. So that is portrayed in these different events here. And of course, as we see here, we have the two groups. We find, of course, descriptions of Hiranyaksha, great demon. And we have the story of Nrsimhadev and Hiranyakasipu, another great demon. And we have the struggle going on between the devatas and the demons. So here's one place where they cooperate together, finally. And they're churning the milk ocean to get amrita, or nectar. The nectar, of course, is not real nectar in the absolute sense, because it's material. And we'll see that the power of this nectar is such that you drink it and then you recover from your sickness or your wounds in battle, etc. To that extent, it is nectar. So it's like a good medicine. So Dhanvantari here is, of course, the father of medicine, avatar for Ayurveda. So it's very appropriate that he is the one that supplies this amrita to prolong your life when you have death-like symptoms, etc. But it's not amrita in the highest sense of the term. And we see that later on when it is used simply to recover from battle, etc. Nevertheless, we can say it is secondarily amrita or nectar, because people have very short vision. So some people think that going to Svargaloka is nectar. It is eternal. Amrita literally means deathless. Amrita means dead. Amrita means not dead. So amrita means something to make you so you don't die. So some people think Svargaloka is like that because you live for thousands and thousands of years. We're eternal. But of course we see that the devatas also die. They may last for 71 yuga cycles. And then the Manu's period is over and all the devatas finished. A new set of devatas take their post. So they're finished after 71 yuga cycle, not eternal. But even the scriptures, like the Karmakanda scriptures, quoted by Jaimini, it says, you go to Svargaloka, you're eternal. But not true. So that is why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna calls them the flowery words of the Vedas, Pushpavacha. Flowery because they look very attractive, but actually not true. It's compared to, we have a nice plant that grows up. And then it has nice, very beautiful, attractive, colorful flowers with nice scent. What's wrong with them? They're poisoned. Poisonous flowers. But they look very attractive. So these are the words of the Vedas, talking about Svargaloka. And doing nice sacrifices and becoming very happy in Svargaloka. It is like the attractive flower, which is actually poisonous. So you go to Svargaloka after much endeavor, you stay there, and then finally you find out it's not eternal, and you die, and you fall back down onto Earth planet again. So, amrita in a secondary sense, because people think, living 5,000 years is equivalent to eternity, or 10,000 years, or 20,000 years. Of course, this is because people in the material world are a little bit foolish. And they're satisfied if they get a little bit more pleasure than they've had before. And that, therefore, becomes nectar for them. So in this way, we have so many types of nectar in the material world. So we find here that Varuni was created. So Varuni is liquor. So liquor is nectar for some people that are addicted to that, and they keep drinking and drinking and drinking. And this for them is heaven. Of course, we know it's also destructive. Temporarily they feel pleasure, and then it's destructive. So this is for the people in Tamaguna. Instantly you get some enjoyment, but long term, great suffering. So similarly, we have so many things in the material world which are nectar for people. They think, I get this, I'll be very, very happy. And this is what keeps people working in the material world. And not just one lifetime, but many, 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 many lifetimes like that. So that is the illusion of material world. We think so many things are nectar. There's a story in the Mahabharata about the Vidura. He tells to Dhritarashtra, after Dhritarashtra loses his kingdom and all the sons are dead, and he's sitting in the house of the Pandavas, and of course Bhagavatam criticizes him as being like a dog just taking the remnants of food from the table, because he was such an evil person, but he was living off the Pandavas afterwards, and the Pandavas were respectful to him because he was elderly, so they took care of him. So Vidura wanted to wake up Dhritarashtra to see his foolish position and to renounce everything and go off to the forest, which he finally did. So he told him this story to convince him. So he says, once there was a Brahmana, and then the Brahmana woke up one morning, and then he opened his eyes and he didn't know where he was. Usually we wake up and we're in our bed, or we're in our bedroom, or we're in Mumbai, or we're in Chennai, or wherever we are. We know where we are when we wake up. He didn't know where he was. It was like he woke up and he was in a strange place. And it was shocking to him. He couldn't understand what had happened. Someone had taken him and put him in a strange country or something. But it was a strange country because there was nothing there. It was all rocks and deserts. So not only was it a strange place, it was very difficult to survive there. He was in the middle of a desert someplace. So what to do? Where to go? He didn't know where he was. All he could do was wander around. Of course, he had to look for some shade or some water or some food, obviously. So he's wandering around like this in this desert. And then he saw, far distant, this looks like some trees there. There's trees, there must be water, maybe some food. So he very eagerly, he ran towards these trees. And he got there, it was not a mirage, it was not an illusion. It was actually, trees were there. And so he got closer and closer, he's very excited. He said, I got some relief from the heat, the thirst, and hunger, etc. But there was a little disappointment, because when he got to the forest, there's a big wall around the forest. You can't get in. It's a huge wall. So he looked for a gate, a door, to get into that forest. Gate through the wall. And he walked and walked and walked and walked and walked. There's no gate. So then he thought, well, I guess I'll have to climb the wall and just jump into the forest. Oh, it's a very high wall. So he had to put a lot of endeavor into climbing up this wall, rock wall, a castle wall or something like that. But he did it. He managed to get to the top of the wall. And then he looked inside, and there's a huge forest there. And he thought, very good, better than the desert. But then there was a choice he had to make. If he got into the forest, the wall was constructed in such a way he could not climb out. He could climb in, he could not climb out. So he had to decide, should I go in the forest, or should I stay in the desert? So he said, I'm going to go into the forest, better. At least I get some shade there and some food and water, etc. So he went into the forest. So he couldn't get out anymore. Trapped in the forest. So then he thought, now I can enjoy. But as soon as he dropped in the forest, he discovered there were some wild animals there. And the wild animals were very hungry. So they began chasing him. So there were tigers and lions and leopards and cheetahs and bears and snakes and wolves and foxes, and even scorpions, and mosquitoes. And they were all chasing him, biting him. So he had to run to the forest. He could not be peaceful in that forest at all. No relief. Worse than the desert. At least in the desert, there were no animals. Here, the animals, and they were hungry animals. All very hungry. And they tried to bite him. And he didn't like pain, so he had to keep running through the forest, avoiding the animals. And once in a while, they would bite him. Then he had to run a little faster. And animals are very strong.
No matter how fast he ran, they almost ran as fast as he was, and they could bite him once in a while. So he had to keep running and running and running and running. How could he do this forever? Impossible. Moreover, it was very difficult to run in the forest because, you know, it's jungle. There are trees, there are vines, there are creepers, there are thorns, there's prickles, there's so many leaves and branches and twigs. And he had to go through all of this, run through all of this. Animals don't mind. And he had, you know, protect himself from all of this. Very, very difficult for him. And then in front of him, he saw this huge Rakshasi, very ferocious, demoness. And Rakshasis, what do they like to do? They like to eat Brahmanas. This is a nice, tender Brahmana. So she was very hungry. So she started running after the Brahmana also. So he's not only the animals are running after him, but this Rakshasi was also running after the Brahmana. And then he tripped and fell. He got his foot tangled in a vine and he fell over. So then he understood, now the animals are going to eat me up, so I'm finished. So he waited. Closed his eyes, didn't want to see the animals eating him up. But nothing happened. The animals didn't do anything to him. So he was very surprised. He opened his eyes and he thought, maybe I'm out of the desert now, or I'm back in the desert, or maybe I'm back in my house. So he opened his eyes and he was very surprised because the animals were all standing there looking at him. Huh? But then he understood that actually he was hanging upside down because his feet got caught in the vine. And he was over a big pit, a big well. And he was hanging upside down, his head was down and his feet were up. And the animals were gathered around the well, but they couldn't actually catch him. So they were all looking at him, trying to eat him, but they couldn't reach him. So he was saved. So he felt great relief. I'm saved from the animals finally. But then he thought, well, how do I get out of this position? I'm stuck here hanging over a well. And he looked in the well, and it was a very deep well, but there's no water at the bottom either. There's rocks at the bottom, and the walls are very steep. So if he fell in there, maybe break his head or something, and he couldn't climb out anyway. And there was a big snake at the bottom. And the snake was waiting for something to fall in because the snake was also very hungry. So he definitely couldn't fall in the well. So then he thought, maybe I'll climb up in the tree. And he looked up in the tree and there his feet were attached to the vine and the vine was attached to the branch of the tree. And he's kind of swinging like this. But there were some rats in the tree. There were white rats and black rats. And they were nibbling at the vine because that's what rats like to do. They like to chew things, yeah? And they chew, 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 like that. So the white rats would be chewing and chewing and chewing. When they got tired, then the black rats would chew and chew. So the vine that was holding his feet up to the tree was gradually getting a little thinner as the white and the black rats began chewing away the vine. And if he moved too much and tried to get in the tree, the whole thing would snap and he would fall in the well. So he couldn't remove without breaking that vine. So he was trapped there with the rats nibbling away and the animals all around trying to get him and the snake at the bottom. But then Vidura said, yes, it's a miserable position. But look, the man is smiling. The Brahmana is smiling. Why is he smiling in this hopeless situation? Surrounded by danger in the top and the bottom and all around his sides. And the Rakshasi also waiting for him. Why does he smile? So Dhritarashtra said, I don't know. It's impossible. You could smile and that. You'd be crying. You shouldn't smile. So then, Vidura said, you see, you look very carefully. This man hanging upside down there. Once in a while, from a branch in that tree, there's a beehive. And a little bit of honey falls out of the hive and it falls into his mouth. So he experiences that taste of the honey. And he says, this is very nice. So he's smiling. And he forgets all about his dangerous situation all around him. Yeah? So that is the position of the jiva in the material world. He's got his amrita, a little bit of honey. And he forgets everything else. We work very hard, or we study very hard. For 20 years we study, or maybe 20 years. 5 years, maybe 4 years, 3 years, all the way to 25 years. Study very hard. And then you get a job and you work another 25, 30, 40 years very hard. 8, 10, 12, 14 hours a day. Why do we do all this? Why do we struggle so hard? Money. And what do we do with the money? We buy some food, buy a house, buy a car, and we say, very nice. So, as long as we get that little enjoyment out of our endeavors, we get that satisfaction. So, everybody has their little nectar, their little honey that they get, and think, very nice. And we do this life after life. So everybody's like the Brahmana hanging upside down over the pit. And what are the animals? The animals are all the harassments you get throughout your life. Sometimes animals do attack you, like dogs may attack you, but people may attack you also, or mosquitoes may attack you, or a snake may bite you, or you may get problems with sickness, etc. And the big Rakshasi Hushi, old age, Jara. Jara attacks everybody. And the snake is death. Death gets everybody. So eventually the black and white rats, the days and the nights, keep passing and passing and passing, and then your lifespan is zero. It's finished. And you drop into the pit, and the snake of death devours you. So this happens to everybody. And then you repeat the same thing. Again, your next life, you're tied up in the tree, and you're taking your nectar and smiling, and then again you drop into the pit. The snake devours you again. Next lifetime, again you're hung upside down, and again you get your little nectar. You think very nice. And again you fall in the pit. Well, this is the maya of the material world, what we think is nectar, which is very nice, very sweet, etc. And we take that as the essence of everything. And we tolerate the suffering. Huh? So this is the nectar of maya, material world. Huh? So, of course, because the devatas are also part of the material world, they also strive to some degree for material things. So, nice, comfortable life, long life, less suffering, etc. And because they've done a lot of sattvic activities in past lifetimes and sacrifices and worship the Lord, they go to Swargaloka and they get that type of nectar. So here they're trying to get more nectar by, if they get attacked by the demons, then they take the nectar. Okay, we recover from our wounds and we can fight stronger and we can defeat the demons. So still, it's a material advantage. That's all it is, this amrita. Nevertheless, it's useful also in the material world. So therefore, we have this avatar of the Supreme Lord, one who brings the nectar, Dhanvantari. And he's the one that founds Ayurveda, medicine. Founder of medicine. So these are methods of helping people prolong their life and get rid of their sicknesses and injuries if they get them. So it's useful even for devotees. So devotees also take medicine, etc. So we don't condemn material means, material things. And Dhanvantari is the avatar of the Lord, produces the methods of medical science, etc., by which we can get rid of our sufferings in this material world, etc. So, this is one level of amrita, helping out the material body, etc. But as we say, it's something like this honey. Don't expect that all of this medical science is going to make you completely happy no matter how long you live, etc. Even Brahma has a death. So nobody's perfect in this material world. There's no perfect medicine to make you eternal. So by material means, we can never get the real amrita, deathlessness. So the real deathlessness is by different process completely, not by material means or medicine or karma yoga and sacrifices and going to higher and higher and higher planets in the material world. The real amrita is beyond that, getting out of the material world. So there's two levels there. And so one level is mere moksha, which you get by jnana and yoga. And then you get liberation, eternal liberation, no more birth and death in the material world. So that is called amrita, also. And that is glorified in many Upanishads. and even glorified in the Bhagavatam in some places. To get free of birth and death, that is the goal for many people. And you can get it through jnana and yoga. So it becomes amrita. However, the Bhagavatam is also very clear to show that actually that amrita is not real amrita. In fact, the devotees reject it completely and criticize it as being useless. More useless than Svargaloka even. Even though it is eternal and it's amrita in one sense because no more birth and death. But the devotees criticize that also. Why? Yes, it's free of birth and death, in that sense, deathless, but not actual happiness or satisfaction for the jiva. Therefore, not very useful. So therefore, the real amrita, the real nectar, the real deathlessness is something else, higher than liberation. So the real amrita is prema. Establishing a pure relationship of love with the Supreme Lord. That brings happiness to the jiva, bliss to the jiva, which is eternal. So that is real nectar. Liberation is eternal, but it's the mere absence of suffering. Prema is eternal, but not only absence of suffering, we get positive bliss through relationship with Bhagavan. So that's the real amrita. So we should not look for the amrita in the material world, material things to make us happy. The only happiness for the jiva is ultimately prema. So the method to get that is sadhana bhakti. So that is the purpose of Bhagavatam. However, even the nectar, the real nectar, comes in various levels of sweetness. Just like we have different types of juice, nectar in the material world. You may have sugarcane juice, very nice and sweet. That's nectar for some people. Then we have maybe musambi juice. Some people like musambi juice, nice taste to it. Some people like grape juice, very sweet, grape juice. And some people like mango juice, very best juice. So we have various sweetnesses also, even in nectars in the material world. So, of course, usually people say that mango, sweetest one like that. So in the spiritual world, we get various nectars as well, various relationships with the Lord in the various forms. So the whole point of Bhagavatam is to point out that the relationship with Krishna gives the sweetest nectar of all. Of all the different relationships with the different forms of the Lord. You could have a relationship with Kapila or Dhanvantari or Varaha or Vamana, etc., Rama. But you get the sweetest relationship with Krishna. So that's the ultimate amrita, ultimate sweetness with Krishna. And even with Krishna, various sweetnesses are there. So it's described in Nectar Devotion that Krishna in Dwarka is Purna, full. Of all the Purna avatars of Krishna, is the highest Purna avatar. But in Dwarka, he's Purna. In Mathura, he's Purnatara, more perfect. And in Vrindavan, he's most perfect, Purnatama. So the Vrindavan Krishna is the Krishna, which is sweetest of the sweetest form of Krishna. So that's why we get the whole of the first part of the 10th canto dedicated to the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan, and these are considered to be the essence of the Bhagavatam. But even there, we get a whole series of sweetnesses. So we may get the sweetness of Krishna in Dasya Rasa, or in Sakya Rasa, or in Vatsalya Rasa, and in Madhurya Rasa. Again, sweet, sweeter, and sweetest. So the sweetest is Madhurya Rasa. Madhurya means sweet. So of all the different sweet rasas of Vrindavan, which are all Madhurya also, that is the sweetest of all Madhurya Rasa. And therefore, the gopis and Radha are glorified as the highest devotees because they participate and enjoy the highest sweetness of Krishna possible in the material world. And for that reason, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very mercifully appears in Kali Yuga to give Madhurya Rasa to the people in general because they're not qualified for it. It's a secret. But Lord Chaitanya is most merciful, more merciful than even Krishna, so he wants to give Radha Krishna Prema to fallen jivas in Kali Yuga, even the aparadis. So that's his mercy. So, in other words, we have spiritual rasa is actual amrita. And of that, Krishna, Emperor Krishna in Vrindavan, is the highest treasure. And highest, highest, highest is the Madhurya rasa of Radha and Krishna. That's the highest, highest of all. That's the topmost treasure of all. Highest sweetness, highest amrita of all. Everything. So that is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the people of Kali Yuga. So a very great gift he's given. So it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they see the big treasure house with filled up with the treasure, but it's got all sorts of locks on the doors, and bolts and everything, because we have to lock up the treasure and keep it away from the unqualified people and the thieves, etc. So, the secret of Radha and Krishna and the secret of Krishna even is kept secret. And we don't hear about it so much in the Vedas and the Shrutis and the Upanishads, etc. The highest things are kept secret. And even bhakti is kept secret. And then we have lots of karma yoga and jnana yoga and astanga yoga, but then bhakti is kept a little secret. And then of all the secrets, Krishna, bhakti is secret. And then, of course, Radha Krishna, very, very secret. All very secret. Locked up in the scriptures. No one can access it. But then it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they take axes and they chop off the locks on the doors and the bolts on the door, and they open the doors and they take all the treasure out and they give it to everybody, really. So now they unlock it, they distribute the nectar of Radha and Krishna to the fallen jivas of Kali Yuga freely. No price. So that is why Lord Chaitanya is Mahavodanya, most merciful. He gives out this treasure of Radha and Krishna, the most rare treasure, highest treasure too. Most unqualified people of Kali Yuga. So that's the highest nectar of all contained in the Bhagavatam. So as I said, it's actually secret. And therefore it's described that the Bhagavatam is also, it keeps it secret to some degree. Of course, it reveals Krishna, etc. But it keeps it secret. So therefore, we don't see Radha's name mentioned, or even Vishakha or Lalita's name mentioned. None of the gopis' names are mentioned, actually. It says, this gopi or that gopi said this. That's all it says. Or this gopi was near Krishna. It doesn't say who. But of course, our acharyas, they had started identifying. So this one is Radha, this one is Lalita, this one is Vishakha, by the actions in relation to Krishna, but not mentioned directly. Vishnu Chakravarti says that the whole Bhagavatam is like Mohini Avatar. So Mohini Avatar, what did she do? She appeared when the demons stole the nectar from the devatas, after the nectar was produced here, this amrita, then the demons took it. And the devatas got very morose, because now the demons will be victorious, because they'll drink the nectar whenever they get defeated, and we'll get weaker and weaker. So, devatas were lamenting. And then, the Lord manifests as Mohini Avatar. Mohini, of course, means bewildering. So she was very beautiful, like Maya personified. So, she said, do not worry, devatas, I will get the nectar back. And of course, we don't expect Mohini to fight or anything, because she's a woman. So she had a different weapon. Her beauty. So she approached the demons, and the demons are fighting over the nectar. Who's going to drink the nectar first? And one demon said, I will drink it. And the other demon said, no, I will drink it.
So they were having an argument over who's going to get the nectar, who's going to be stronger. And then they saw Mohini, they forgot everything. And they said, oh, who is this beautiful woman coming? Huh? And Mohini approached, and then she spoke. And when she spoke, they were so overcome with love. They said, oh, she's in love with me. She's very attracted to me. So then they thought, what should we do? And then so Mohini spoke. And Mohini said, oh, you're all very nice. Give me the nectar. So the demons thought, oh, she's very beautiful. She likes us. We'll do anything for her. Because she likes us. So we'll give her the nectar. So they gave her the nectar. So Mohini took the nectar and gave it to the Devatas. In this way, she defeated the demons. So Vishnu Chakravarti says, the Bhagavatam is also like Mohini. Not the nectar, the material nectar that the Devatas and the demons have, but the nectar of real, the highest nectar. Krishna and Radha and Krishna, that's the real nectar. So, Mohini, Bhagavatam, hides the nectar from the demons and gives it to the devotees. So, the Bhagavatam is constructed in such a way that if you are a jnani, or a yogi, or a karmi, or a materialist, or whatever, and you read the Bhagavatam, you will not appreciate it. You will not understand about Radha and Krishna and why Krishna has various pastimes in Vrindavan, etc. So in that way, the demons are cheated. The materialists are cheated. And they can't understand about Krishna at all. They cannot relish the nectar. On the other hand, those who are devotees, who have favorability towards the Lord, they can begin reading and hearing and studying Bhagavatam, and they can relish the name, form, qualities, activities of Krishna, and appreciate the rasa of Krishna and his devotees. So, in this way, Bhagavatam has two faces. One for the people who are materialists, hides everything, and one for the devotees. So like Mohini, takes away from the demons and gives to the devotees. So we have to therefore approach Bhagavatam with the proper attitude. That is, with bhakti. And we do that by following the explanations of the acharyas, who will explain where things are hidden, where things are a little confusing for us. Hidden why? So that the demons don't get access and misuse the knowledge. So we have to take the Bhagavatam through the authorities. Then we get the highest nectar of all. So that is why we actually study Bhagavatam every day, because it has got the highest nectar in it. And not the nectar of, you know, material long life or whatever. The actual nectar is the spiritual nectar of prema for Radha and Krishna. So that should be our goal, not the material nectar. Okay, any question?
We fell down from Gulok or spiritual sky before, say, billions of years, and we took millions of births. It is said like that many times. And only before 5,000 years, Lord said that you better surrender to me. So during those period, for millions of years, was there any chance to surrender? Was there any guidance to surrender?
Oh, we have countless chances. It's not millions of years, it's billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and billions of lifetimes and billions and billions of Brahmas that we're in the material world. Before, of course, now we're 50 years through Brahma's life. Not just one day of Brahma, and each day has 1,000 yuga cycles, but we're 50 years through this Brahma's life. But there was a previous Brahma, and a previous Brahma, and a previous Brahma, and a previous Brahma, and a previous Brahma. And through that, we've all been going through body after body of body in the material world. Ananya Bahir Mukha, we cannot trace out a beginning to our births in the material world. And in every birth of Brahma, every day of Brahma, and we're born there, some as an animal or a plant or as a human being or as a David or whatever, the Lord appears as avatars throughout the day of Brahma. 4,000 Yuga avatars appear in one day of Brahma, plus we have the Leela avatars and the Guna avatars and the Manvantara avatars and Shaktivesh avatars, all these avatars appearing throughout the day of Brahma. But, unfortunately, we're a little dull-headed. And even though the Lord gives mercy by manifesting as avatar throughout the day of Brahma, we don't take advantage of it. So we get born the next day of Brahma. And then we get more advantages. We don't take advantage. And next day. And it goes on for Brahma's lifetimes like this. This is the nature of the jivas in the material world. They're so heavily attracted to material enjoyment, a material body, material identification. Very difficult for them to even appreciate the Lord when He appears directly as avatar. Very difficult for them. So, if we do get the chance of getting inclination to bhakti as a human being, then we're considered very fortunate. Very good opportunity. And particularly if it's after Krishna manifests once in the day of Brahma. And after Lord Chaitanya, of course. Very, very fortunate. So, if that happens, we appear after Lord Chaitanya, we're very, very fortunate, because then we get an opportunity to realize Krishna. So, other times we may realize Vishnu, Rama, or other forms of the Lord, if we happen to even get to that level of appreciating bhakti. But just to get to the level of bhakti is rare. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, out of thousands and thousands of people, hardly anyone knows me in truth. So it's a very, very long process.
Get the highest prema.
Oh, what is the qualification for getting the prema in Kali Yuga? They're born in Kali Yuga and Lord Chaitanya appeared, that's all. Qualification is that Lord Chaitanya manifests himself at this time, that's all. And then he gives to everybody, even the most fallen jiva of Kali Yuga and the aparadis, etc. So the qualification is no qualification except being born after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared. That's our qualification, basically. And how does he do it? He does it through Nam Sankirtan. It's through Nam Sankirtan that we can preach to everybody, even the aparadis. We can't preach the glories of the holy name, but we can let them hear the holy name. So even the demons and the materialists, if they hear the holy name, it affects the jiva a little bit. Huh? And eventually they will get shraddha, and then we can preach to them. Huh? And of course, we see the effect of the name even of Narayan, to speak of the name of Krishna. Name of Narayan, uttered by Ajamil when he named his son, "Oh, I'll call you Narayana." All of his karmas were gone. So the name of the Lord, very powerful, even for unqualified people like Ajamil, who was a very sinful person. But all of his karmas immediately dissipated. So name is very powerful, and name of Krishna is most powerful. And delivered through the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But even more powerful. So we cannot estimate the power of Krishna's name delivered through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So even the demons who get to hear it, it's good for them.
It means that the jivas in the previous Kali Yuga, they couldn't get this mercy. The Mahaprabhu was from there.
They don't get previous Kali Yuga, they don't get Lord Chaitanya, and they don't get Krishna. They will get the Kali Yuga avatar, who is darkish in color, blackish in color, and he teaches Nam Sankirtan, but not Krishna's name particularly. Some they get Vishnu, Bhakti or whatever, but not Radha Krishna. So when Lord Chaitanya comes, then we get Radha Krishna, which is very special.
They describe the Dandantari as a partial expansion of an expansion. Like Prithu was also expansion of an expansion. He was considered Shaktivesha avatar.
Yeah.
He was not considered the Supreme Lord. He was actually a jiva.
Yeah.
Empowered.
Yeah.
And it's described that any living energy who is preaching the glories of the Lord could be also considered like a Shaktivesha avatar. So we're also part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, but is it the different parts and parcels due to their desire are empowered by the Lord in certain ways to have certain powers?
Yeah. Well, Shaktavesh avatars are jivas, of course, by definition. So they're like, you know, particle anu. Huh? And but they have a vesha, which means the Lord, by His mercy, gives part of His shakti, His internal shakti to them on a permanent basis. Huh? So it's described by in Lago Bhagavatamrita that the Shaktavesh avatars are also eternal in form, and they're in the spiritual world also. So we have Parsaram and Prithu and the Kumaras and other ones like that. They have eternal forms, Narada Muni. And they appear within the material world also by the will of the Lord. So they're jivas with special eternal powers. So Narada Muni has bhakti, for instance, and the Kumaras have jnana, and Prithu has the power to level the earth and all this, and Parsaram to kill the evil kshatriyas. So they have specific powers dedicated to them. So they're in a very special position. They've been given powers by the Lord, even though they're this amsa. So we're one type of amsa. We're called amsa of the Lord, like particles of sun rays or whatever, like, and related to the sun. So we're different, but kind of the same. In that sense, we're amsa and amsi are the same thing. But these other forms of the Lord, who are actually not jivas, are also called amsa. But one way of defining them is sva-amsa. We're called vibhinamsa, separated particles. They're called sva-amsa, part of the Lord, His own particles, His own parts. So they're intimately related with the Lord. We call them expansions. So they're the Lord in another form, slightly less powers, slightly less qualities than their source. So we call them amsas, but they're still the Supreme Lord. Whereas the jiva is amsa because he has similar qualities, but quite significantly less. But to distinguish from matter, he's at least chit, eternal and chit. Whereas matter is achit. So in this way, the sva amsas, or the what we call the amsa of the amsa of the amsa, are expansion of expansion of expansion. They're still the Supreme Lord, but with a little less manifestation of powers. Doesn't mean they don't have the powers, but they don't manifest in that particular form. But because actually, the amsas are also only one. It's only one Supreme Lord. There's only one Lord, but He's manifested as Krishna, Rama, Vishnu, other forms like this in the spiritual world. They're all one, actually, one Bhagavan. But we call them amsa and amsi. Krishna is the amsi, and they're the amsas, in the sense that He manifests all the qualities, they manifest less and less and less and less, less qualities. And then we can also categorize them as Purna forms and Paravasta forms and Prabhava forms and Vaibhava forms according to the amounts of qualities they show. And then below that we get the jivas, the Shaktavesh avatars, who are also amsas, but in a completely different category. And below that we get the regular jivas, who are no power at all, no avesh at all. They're also amsas, but they're... What's that? Oh. This happened here in Chakshusha Manvantara. And we're in Vaisasata Manvantara. So this was millions and millions and millions of years ago, actually. We're now in, 28th cycle of Vaisasata Manvantara times 4 million, 28 by 4 million, 4.3 million years. And before that was Chakshusha Manvantara, when Dhanvantari first appeared. So he appeared there. And then again appeared apparently in the beginning of Vaisasata Manvantara. So he appears twice, actually. We could say it's a dull reflection. Everything in the material world is a dull reflection. So the attempt is there to do something. And we find that like Greek medicine was something like Ayurveda. They had a theory like the kapha, pitta, etc., like that, and, you know, whatever like that. There's something related, but again, it's a little bit divorced, and we could say influenced more by material observation more than anything else. So that's kind of corrupted it further. Okay, Hare Krishna.